This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Rock is an expansive genre of music that has firm roots in Black history. Icons like Sister Rosetta Tharpe and St. Louis legends like Tina Turner and Chuck Berry have been credited as originators in the genre. Yet white artists such as Elvis Presley and groups like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones have been more frequently recognized as rock and roll's classic creators. And as more and more white artists entered the genre, Black people began turning away from rock and toward R&B, soul, and pop music instead. But there have always been Black musicians in the genre. One of them is Southern Illinois native Chan Maurice Evans. He's played with multiple rock bands in the St. Louis area, including You People. Here's a bit of their original track, North Shore Groove. Evans is also the producer of a film docu-series called They Called Me a Sellout, Being Black in the White Rock and Roll Industry. He joins us now to talk about that project. Chan Maurice Evans, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much.
So, originating, getting back to the beginning, did you seek rock yourself or did it find its way to you?
It found its way to me. I was maybe 10 or so, and visiting my grandmother in Indianapolis and sleeping in the living room. The TV was there, and I snuck it on, you know, volume was on one, and found MTV. And the Pet Shop Boys was the first, that was kind of synth new wave
sort of
sound, but I gravitated towards that, and then eventually my cousin and I used to watch reruns of The Monkees after school. So they were a 60s rock band, and then eventually MTV came back into the fold, and I saw Living Color, the band Living Color, their single Cult of Personality, and that was just, you know, full frontal rock and roll right in your face, and I was like, okay, this is for me too.
I mean, that really does represent a very broad range.
Yeah.
What was it about that music specifically that evoked something in you or elicited something from you, Chan?
I think it was something different that my family had their radio turned on 108, Magic 108, which was pretty much an R&B station. And that was fine. And then otherwise, you know, going to my mom's church, it was choir music. And rock and roll was just stirring. It was melodic, yet a little louder and a little more aggressive. Not that I had any teen angst or anything like that, but there was just another appeal to it. And in the music videos, I think I always saw, you know, I guess it was the white rock and roll guys banging their hair, you know, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then I'd see Living Color and they had locks and braids and all of these things. And I was like, oh, okay. So I get to do that too. Mm-hmm. So and hence, you know.
Right, right.
You've got locks. Yeah, I've got locks.
Yeah. So how is it that you went from listening to rock to rocking rock yourself?
I joined the school band when I was in sixth grade. Mm-hmm. And I played throughout high school. My dad wouldn't let me quit, even though I just wasn't. I wanted drums first, and they said that was full. So I decided trumpet, and they said that was full too. So it was a choice between alto sax and the flute. And for whatever reason, you know, as a kid, I was like, I'm not playing a flute.
Right.
You know, I wish I had because I walked to school. So
that would have been a much easier walk.
For sure. I wasn't thinking that way. I wasn't emotionally mature enough to think that way. But. And meeting people in the school band, there was a guitar player who brought his guitar, and then we had an opportunity to play drum sets for what was called the stage band, and then formed bands on the outside of school, you know, extracurricular activities, and then that just kind of blossomed. I began teaching, mm-hmm. you know, taught for 30 years.
Yeah.
And worked for School of Rock for 10 of those years. So I always told my students that I would learn songs mostly. I would take what I learned from guitar lessons and then apply that to learning albums from my favorite bands. And then I would, you know, stay up in my room and I would turn my amp up like a concert level, turn the stereo up. And I had this one green light that I would turn on. That was the spotlight. Mm-hmm. And I would close the vents and make it hot in there like a club. And I would, that's how I learned to perform. I would just play, and my parents loved that idea. And then, like I said, eventually you wind up playing with other people.
So if we fast forward then to this docuseries, where did the idea to do a docuseries about Black people and rock come from?
It's all in the name. For now, they called me a sellout, which was my peers and my some family members, some of my cousins. I guess I don't know if it had anything to do with growing up in a suburb of St. Louis, like on the Illinois side in Edwardsville, but just I speak clearly. And a lot of people kind of attribute that to whiteness. And it's like, well, just because I sound a certain way doesn't mean that I'm trying to sound, you know, the sound like a white person. So they'd ask, you know, why you talk so plain? Why you listen to that white boy music? The term sellout was thrown around a lot. Mm-hmm. It's like, you sold, man. You sold out, you know. And then I'd hear from other white kids, like, you're the whitest Black guy I know. And I knew it didn't feel right.
Yeah.
And I would just kind of shrug it off or kind of chuckle nervously. And just thinking of that, I had, I guess it was 2016, I had posted something on Facebook about, you know, do I know any filmmakers that would be interested in doing a documentary on me about this? And maybe 2 years later, someone, Brian McClelland, he's a filmmaker in St. Louis as well. Blip Blap Videos is his production company. And he said, "Looks, you know, I'd love to help you get this started." So he filmed the first four episodes with me. So Steve Ewing of The Urge, Bernie and UV Hayes, St. Louis legends, radio and blues legends, and then my band at the time, You People, and then Ben Kenny from the band Incubus. Mm-hmm. We traveled a little bit to go visit him. So,
no big deal.
Yeah, right.
Incubus.
Yeah. It was, right, exactly. And as we got those contacts, I think that was through Steve and a mutual friend that heard about what we were doing, who is now one of my producers, Donald Williams. It turned into more than I could expect, or more than I ever dreamed about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they said, well, let's keep this going.
In episode 2 of your docuseries, They Called Me a Sellout, you interviewed Bernie and UV Hayes. As a singer of blues, jazz, and soul, UV Hayes has been recording music since the early 1980s, and Bernie Hayes' career has included time as a radio DJ and host and recording artist and music producer. And as it happens, he also was a former news director for St. Louis Public Radio. Now, in talking with you, Chan, about what Black musicians faced, Bernie Hayes dropped some big names and described what they had to do to play their music in the U.S. through the 1960s.
Any R&B artist, any Black artist who was touring the South or the North or the East or the West, mm-hmm. only certain clubs they could play.
Right.
That was a Chitlin' circuit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Including Lou Rawls made a record about it. I mean, mm-hmm. even Lou Rawls, not King Cole. Mm-hmm. Couldn't play but certain areas,
yeah.
clubs. Mm-hmm. And if they did play certain clubs, they had to come in the back. Mm-hmm. Las Vegas was terrible for that.
Right, yeah.
Lost people, your biggest stars, Nat King Cole, mm-hmm. Duke Ellington, Count Basie.
Yeah.
They would play the big rooms, but they couldn't eat in the hotels. So they couldn't stay in the hotel.
So Bernie and UV started, like many other Black musicians did, on the Chitlin circuit. What is the connection, Chan, between that circuit and St. Louis?
It stretches from Austin, Texas to Boston, Mass. And it's where we, you know, as Black people were able to perform, you know, behind curtains, in separate rooms. and I believe that stretched through maybe East St. Louis and some of the clubs here. In that interview, Bernie said it's still happening today. It's still going on today. Payola on the radio. You know, if you don't have certain backing, publishing, plagiarism, that still plays a big part. You had mentioned the Rolling Stones, like bands like Led Zeppelin, Rolling Stones, Beach Boys would take certain like mimic songs almost exactly and change the lyrics up because they could be photographed and talked about in the radio. Otherwise, you know, the black artists just had no mention or they had no legal teams to fight, you know, for publishing and you know, take their music back.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about the history, and yeah. History is, you know, as we mentioned in our introduction, very much a part of the series that you are producing. When was it, though, that you began learning about the history of rock? Did you go to Bernie and UV Hayes because you already had a sense of what it was?
Somewhat. I had contacted Jeremy Siegel Moss. He used to be big in the blues scene. He's actually a ceramics artist right now. He had given me a list of names, and I think it was just within the research of the Chitlin Circuit and who I could speak to that these things came about. I eventually had to attended a conference for School of Rock in Austin, Texas, and I had to lead a seminar, two different seminars, and my subject matter was the Chitlin Circuit. So that was certainly a big, you know, that research was certainly a big help, and it exposed a lot of those details.
How is rock history black history, or how is black history rock history,
yeah,
whichever way you know, you want to approach it?
So the pentatonic scale is, from what I understand, an African scale. It's five major tones, or five tones out of the major scale, or minor scale, excuse me. And then you can add a certain note, and it's nicknamed the blue note. So that gives you sort of that... And bending strings, so certain instruments, you bend a string. You know, there are all sorts of different instruments that can do this, but those tones were part of songs that came from slave ships and from the cotton fields. And if you listen to old recordings, somehow if they were recorded, especially say Robert Johnson, so throughout the 20s and 40s, you know, throughout there, these tones were, and it was darker sounding. These darker tones sort of draw out different emotions and literally called the blues. So, and the darker subject matter, I think, influenced these skiffle bands and these other bands and to take on these sounds, and it really gave them an edge and gave them an allure, like I'm going to say the word mystical, but something a little more menacing. And then, you know, other tones like the tritone or the devil's chord, those things were kind of added to the mix, and then volume, and then you get the development of, you know, the electric amplifier. And the people that could afford this were the people with money.
Mm.
And those were often the white musicians, and then England got a hold of it. So that it got whitewashed, but it's certainly rooted from the Delta, Mississippi Delta, and the Deep South.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're speaking with local rock artist and film producer Chan Maurice Evans. He is one of the black artists here in the St. Louis area and across the country as well, who's reclaiming the genre of rock and doing so in particular with a docuseries that is called They Called Me a Sellout. So I have left this question to the end because I think it might be the one that people would ask first, and that's about the title. The full title of this docuseries is They Called Me a Sellout, Being Black in the, quote, white rock and roll industry. There is no pussyfooting when it comes to this word, sellout. Why did you use this term?
Why did they use this term? They called me a sellout. Like, literally, I'm a, they feel like that I was abandoning Black culture by playing this music, and they couldn't have been more wrong. It is a harsh word, and I think it raises lots of questions. And people may have used the word and not exactly known what they were saying to people. I remember an interview. It has nothing really to do with the series, but an interview with Jason Newsted, who was a former bass player for Metallica. And they put out a certain album, and it didn't sound like the last album. And he said, yeah, we sell out every seat in every town we play everywhere we go. I feel like the way I was called a sellout was as a pejorative. You know, they wanted to insult me, but they couldn't have been further from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this is, I hope, I actually would hope that those people that would use that term against me would see this series and realize, you know, where they were wrong.
Mm-hmm. It's also a past tense.
Yeah.
They called me a sellout. Does that mean that there has been a change? Are people seeing and understanding what you felt, maybe going back to when you were a kid in your grandmother's living room with that volume on one, you know, watching, listening to Pet Shop Boys, or, you know, watching the Monkees later and then seeing Living Color. Has there been some progress? Is there less of a feeling that you get, that people regard you specifically, and then those you've interviewed as sellouts?
Yeah.
What is the alternative term?
That's a great question. I feel like the biggest change has been within me, and like learning in myself, you know, my self-perception, learning all of this information and speaking with these other people. Not all of them have had the same experience. I think a lot of the people's, say Steve Ewing, for instance, his band members are all white, but they were certainly supportive. But us growing up as maybe the sole Black member of the band, I think those friends were already on our side. We, you know, socially, morally, you resonate. You hang out with the people that you are, you know. So hearing that title, I think it just kind of that really just kind of reflects me. So we actually are changing it a little bit too.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So the like I said, the project is evolving. I'll be part of Artica. I guess I'll say it here first. It's going to be called the Gradient Scale.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know if those guys will be upset with me for saying that. but I think that kind of because we're broadening the conversations to people of any, you know, background that had influenced or had been influenced by Black artists. So that's just going to make this project go a little farther. But I hope that in their interviews, they're able to really kind of express and have a sort of a cathartic kind of moment along with what I'm getting out of it too.
Mm.
And
the band that you're playing with, tell us about that, the band you're playing with.
Intracentral. My first band was You People. That was an all-Black band. But Intracentral is a collective. I call it a super group because we've all been around for a long time. Parts of Cave of Swords, parts of The Tennis Lesson, parts of Traveling Sound Machine, parts of Zantigo, They Need Machines to Fly. Like, we're all sort of, I don't want to use the word, but it's like a musical incestuous sort of.
Okay.
Like, we've all been together somehow. But it's a six-piece band. I play bass, and we all sing. Senyata McDermott has just joined the band, and she was in Cave of Swords. But Jesse Halbauer is our lead singer. And it's kind of a long story that way, but we're playing Free For All, the free
showcase.
Music festival. Yeah, the showcase coming up on the 6th and 7th of September. Mm-hmm. And we're on Sunday at Dot Zack Theater, which I haven't been there yet.
Okay.
I've heard it's pretty amazing.
All right, right down here in Midtown.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Chan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
You can find all 12 episodes of Chan Maurice Evans's They Called Me a Sellout docuseries on YouTube at 32-20 Films or by visiting our website. That's stlpr.org.
This episode was produced by Darius Farner.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.